Going to kick off tonight. Welcome everybody. We've got a good mix of Kiwis and Australians tonight. Mix it up a bit. We won't keep you as long tonight as we normally do, but that's okay because you've all got no doubt lots and lots of things to do. Tonight's topic. Well, firstly, can everyone see my screen? That would be helpful. Just double check that's the case.
Yes, we can.
Yep,
we can.
Awesome. Okay. So I'm going to give you my personal five top tips to be great at selling fitness. And nothing in here is something that you wouldn't have been already exposed to throughout the program in different ways or through some of the workshops that you may have had previously with Kerry or Roy or myself. It just brings them into specific focus. And bearing in mind that the workshop I did on Super Day in Christchurch was around selling, but more around the processes of selling, and we'll build on that again in the next workshop in Christchurch and also when I'm up in Auckland 2 months in a row shortly. And at some stage when they let me out of New Zealand and I come across to Brisbane. So, but this is more around the sort of, I suppose if you like, the psychology of selling and whatnot, more so than the process of. And I suppose the starting point is, if I was to ask a question, the principles of selling and the psychology of selling is similar no matter, you know, what industry or what profession that you're in. But there's something about fitness or the fitness industry or the fitness profession and selling in it that makes it a little bit more unique, makes it a little bit more perhaps challenging. Does anyone have an insight on what that might be, just as a starting point, and why that might be?
Because we are selling concept, nothing physical.
Yeah, you're selling a service, so there is definitely, you know, that sort of dynamic rather than selling a widget or a car or something like that. But, and that's a good point, Martian, but not exactly what I was looking for.
The word of mouth?
Sorry? A result, yeah?
Word of mouth?
No. What is it we're dealing with?
But somebody pointed out, because we have to sell something that will come in the future.
Yeah, all of those things are true.
It requires an effort on their behalf.
Yeah, that's also true, but not exactly what I'm looking for. What makes it a little bit unique is that it's dealing with something that's very important and very personal and very it's very difficult for some people, and that's their bodies. And how they feel about themselves, you know, and there's nothing that we take perhaps more seriously in life than some of us would say
your health,
yeah, and your wellness, and you know, ultimately everyone wants to, you know, live a healthy and happy life. And when you start to deal with something that's so close, so personal, and in some cases so difficult for some people, it brings an extra dimension to the selling process that can make it more challenging and just emphasizes how important certain elements of the selling process or the selling psychology and the selling process become. You know, when you can depersonalize it and you can take it away from you and you can relate it to a product or a service that's not directly and specifically related to perhaps how you look, how others think you look, how you feel about yourself, it's easier. But when those emotions come into play and you're dealing with someone's body and how they feel about their body, then that dimension creates an extra challenge in the sales process. And you know, so it means if you can sell fitness, my argument is you can sell anything. You know, if you can sell someone a solution to their pain as it relates to their body, then you've acquired a really unique and special sort of skills that will allow you to be successful in sales and pretty much, you know, anything that you choose to turn your hand to, you know, providing you've got the underlying, you know, knowledge of the product. So I think that's what makes selling fitness a little bit unique, and why, you know, the five tips that I'm going to share with you become really, really important, and rising to that challenge, if you like, and making sure that you can become not only a great fitness professional, but someone who can sell fitness. And that's about, you know, having the requisite skills to do that. And if you can, you know, that's the key to ultimately building a successful business. You know, sales fixes everything. You know, no one has ever gone out of business when they've had money in the bank. People have money in the bank ultimately as a consequence of being successful at selling their product or selling their service. So, you know, there's no escaping the fact that it's a really important part of becoming a successful fitness professional. You do fantastic things with the client in the studio or in the gym or in the park, wherever you apply your trade. But if you don't get the opportunity to do that with someone through the sales process, then you can't make the difference that you seek, and you certainly can't have the bank account that you would like. So let's just kick off and have a look at tip number one. Okay. Tip number one is that and it comes from Sigmund Freud, the psychology of and it's actually called the pleasure principle, according to Sigmund Freud, when it was developed, and that's the pain and pleasure. And we talk a lot about it, but it's really, really important that you deeply understand that, because at a superficial level, we say that there's a natural tendency for everyone to want to move away from pain to pleasure in everything they do and every decision that they make. And that's true. Ultimately, it's a fundamental human need to move towards things that make them feel happy, so to move away from pain towards pleasure. But in the fitness professional room, when you're dealing with someone's, you know, body, particularly around the need to change, you know, the tipping point that someone has, and I refer to it as the tipping point between, you know, the dynamic between pain and pleasure. While someone, and this, if you understand this underlying principle, it becomes very powerful in how you understand people and how you understand the communication process that you have to go through. Everybody reaches a tipping point at some particular, well, not everybody, that's not actually true. When people reach the tipping point, and what I mean about the tipping point is when the pain of being the way they are becomes greater than the pain of change, or in their mind, the perceived pain of change, they will make the change. So what I'm saying there is the pain that they feel about how they are now is greater than the pain of change, because for most people, the change process is painful and scary and daunting. But when the pain of being the way they are, it increases to a point where it's greater than the pain of the change or the perceived pain of change, then they will start to move towards the pleasure. And generally speaking, they have to make that decision. They have to actually reach a point in their own mind where they can see now, or they can see that the pain of the change that they have to go through, the pain of getting off the couch, the pain of engaging with a personal trainer, the pain of stepping across or opening the door and stepping across the threshold, exposing them to the world that they see, which is very scary, that the pain of that now is in fact less than the pain that they feel about themselves, then they until they see that, they won't make that change. Now, unless you are able to lead them through that process, unless you are able to help them see that the pain of the change is in fact not as great as perhaps what they perceive it to be. And that you can help people to reach and to go past that particular tipping point. For people like us who are fit and healthy and strong, we find that very difficult to understand, because we don't see any pain at all in what we do. In fact, we just see the pleasure. But for those people who are overweight, have huge body issues, have self-confidence issues, they see us as very odd people. They see us as strange people. They see it, the gym environment, everything about it as being very scary and very daunting and very intimidating. And so when they're sitting on the couch saying to themselves, I'm so unhappy and I don't want to be this way, and they said, well, but then they start to focus on what the change may be. The fear they have at that change exceeds the pain that they feel staying the way they are. So what do? They stay the way they are. Now, some people will make that transition themselves. Some people will put their toe in the water. And the people that put their toe in the water, it's part of your role is to help them to bridge, to go over that bridge, if you like, to be able to be empathetic to the pain that they feel, to be able to be empathetic to the pain that they also perceive of the change, but to show them that, in fact, the pleasure that they will receive in due course will outweigh the pain as they perceive it to be now. And so, you know, the psychology of pain and pleasure is a lot more complicated than just the simple decision, I want to move away from pain towards pleasure. Because to some, what we see as pleasure, or what we see as pleasure, is in fact pain, just a different sort of pain, and in some cases, greater pain than the pain that they currently feel at this particular point in time. Now, if you understand that at a deep level, then you're able to use that in your communication with the potential client, and to understand that that's where they may be, not just assume or believe that that they are already focused on the pleasure and ready to move away from the pain, because that may quite simply not be the case, and they're looking to you to help go over that bridge, to help them to understand, in fact, that the journey that they may be able to go, that they may be contemplating going on, is in fact not as scary and as daunting as they might otherwise think it to be. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes.
Okay. So the tip number one, okay, and there's a great little quote from Anthony Robbins, and I'm going to show you a clip of him later. Hopefully you can hear it, and if not, then I'll give everyone the address so that you can go and watch it yourself. So the secret of success is learning how to use pain and pleasure instead of having pain and pleasure use you. If you do that, you're in control of your life. If you don't, life controls you. Now, that's talking to you, but think of that statement as it might be talking to your prospective clients. Okay. Pain is controlling their life. So you have to provide them the solution and the pathway to go from that pain across the bridge to the pleasure that is on the other side. Okay, so that's tip number one. Tip number two, seek first to understand, then to be understood. Who of you that is here tonight have been overweight and had serious health / obesity challenges? Anybody?
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Me, for yeah, sure.
That's Lisa. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Anyone else? No? Well, I did. So, you know, I'll join that team. What this is about is, you know, sometimes you have to walk in another person's shoes to be able to truly understand what it's like to be in their shoes. For those of us who haven't experienced that, it's very difficult for you to understand what it's truly like. Now, I can speak for myself, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lisa and Abdul. You know, if you spend a large portion of your life, and for you, Abdul, you're still quite young, so you haven't spent anywhere near as much time as perhaps Lisa and myself did in this particular category, those things have a deep effect on your subconscious psychology. And while now we may be in our conscious minds very in tune and understanding and aware of everything to do with health and fitness, etc., etc. There's some deep, I suppose, psychological scars that remain in you, deep in your subconscious mind, and that places us in a very good position to be able to understand clients or potential clients that we may come in contact with on the journeys as personal trainers, or on the journey as making, taking someone from where they are to where they want to be. It's an advantage that we have, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's anything that's, that someone who hasn't been there can't develop. But for the others of you that haven't, it's about trying to reach a position where you actually understand, or seek to understand, what it is like for those people who may have lived, a large portion of their life overweight and unhappy and unfit and unwell and unhealthy, etc., etc., etc. Because it's not, until you can truly understand someone's pain, that you can relate to it and be able to help them to go on the journey. Those people look at health professionals and see strange people. They see people who are very unlike them. We're naturally intimidating, we're naturally scary because of, the way we look and the way we act and the way we think and the way we talk. And your ability to be empathetic and to bridge that gap is strongly linked to your ability to be able to understand them, to be able to, experience by walking in their shoes the pain that they may have felt and that they still have and will continue to have into the future. And even now, and I can't speak for the others, but I'll be interested to hear what they say. While my life is massively transformed in the last 20 years, you still carry, certain baggage, I suppose, for a sake of a better term, that goes back into your past and affects your thinking at different particular points in time. And one might say, fanatical approach to my health and my well-being is driven by massive fear of never going back to where I was in the past. And that it's all about avoiding and never wanting to experience the pain that once was experienced at a previous time. So, that's about understanding that psychology, understanding that the pain that the clients that you're going to come in contact with, that you're going to actually have an opportunity to help when you're in the sales process. Lisa, how do you feel about that?
Yes, I find it something I can relate to. And a client that I took today, I just said the odd thing, and she looks at me and she goes, "How do you know that?" And I say, "Well, I've been there, done that." She goes, "Oh, that's right." But I also, my trainer, my Max Fitness trainer that got me losing all this weight, she hadn't been in that position. So it can be done by somebody who hasn't been there, as long as they have the right attitude as well. So I think, I'm benefited from having been there and know exactly what it feels like, but others with the right empathy and understanding can equally get us there as well. So I can see both sides.
Absolutely, yeah, and I'm not suggesting that that's not the case. I'm suggesting that, if you have been there, you have a small advantage, but, that presents other challenges because you may, assumptive and et cetera, may not be a good thing. But that your ability, if you haven't, to be able to, or for any trainer to seek first to be to understand before you're understood, to walk in your prospective client's shoes, to try and experience their pain at a level that allows you then truly to create a relationship or to create rapport that builds the relationship is a really critical part of the sales process. And if you can do that, then your success in sales, which is your success in gaining clients and building a successful business will be greatly, greatly enhanced. Okay. All right, and Abdul, you did incredibly well. You did yours. You're only how old now, Abdul? 20?
Yeah, I'm straight 20.
20, yeah. So, you know, you've got, your journey has been a little bit shorter than Lisa's and mine, but it's still an outstanding journey, an outstanding achievement. So well done on that. Okay, so that's sales tip number two. Sales tip number three. Oops. Okay. Key to, you know, we talk a lot about it, and that's about building rapport. And the reality is that until you've built the appropriate level of rapport with a client, you haven't really got permission to uncover their pain. It's the trust that you create, or the relationship, the trust that's created between you and the prospective client, that gives you, if you like, permission to ask questions that is going to uncover the pain for which you then have in turn to provide the solution. And most sales fall down at this particular point. Inadequate rapport is established, and before the pain is uncovered and before the solution is provided and offered, in fact, inadequate rapport is provided, is established, and the pain therefore is never really uncovered, but a solution is thrown at the customer, and ultimately that will result in a sale. You know, the emphasis has to be on how important establishing great rapport with your customers, and for some of us that comes naturally. For some of us, that is more difficult, and that's all to do with our underlying communication skills, the nature of our DISC profiles, our ability to manage our DISC profiles and match and mirror the clients or the prospective clients that we come in contact with. But you have to become great at this, and if you become great at this, then it will translate to a substantially greater conversion rate of prospects that you come into in contact with to becoming clients. And it starts with the very simple things like asking and using their name. And it staggers me how often I meet people who then again very shortly thereafter have to ask me my name again because they've forgotten it in the space of, you know, maybe that's because I've got a very unmemorable name, but it's a common failing, you know, and that's indicative of the fact that we're not listening. We'll touch on that a little bit later. That, you know, how important, you know, that particular step in the process is in building rapport. We like nothing more than to hear our name being used. You know, when you introduce yourself to someone and they come back it with you and they use your name, it creates an immediate feeling of trust, an immediate feeling of confidence, and it's telling you that the person is, you know, the person is listening to you and taking in what you're saying. You have to become great at asking questions. You have to be able to show empathy, to find common ground, and, you know, I shouldn't say this, but sometimes you have to look to find that common ground, or sometimes you have to perhaps stretch the truth a little bit to find some common ground. And, you know, that's just the sales technique, and I don't want to overdo that particular one. But it's important because commonality breeds confidence and helps to breed trust. You know, to follow their lead and to be genuine, all of those factors, you know, ultimately together, you know, working together will allow you to establish and create rapport that is the foundation to the rest of the sales process. If you don't establish rapport, you won't uncover their pain because the client, the customer won't let you. And if you don't uncover their pain, then you can't provide the right solution and you certainly won't make the sale. And, you know, statistically, poor rapport or the establishment of poor rapport would account for probably 80% of sales failures beyond that particular point. And so this requires a lot of practice, and we'll come to practice a little bit later on. You know, you shouldn't be practicing on prospects. You shouldn't be learning how to create massive rapport with people on how to ask questions and how to ask questions about answers to the questions and how to show empathy. You shouldn't be learning how to do that stuff on prospects that you've worked hard to attract, on prospects that you've spent money with your Facebook marketing or your mail drops or your whatever. You should be practicing these skills with yourself in the mirror. You should be practicing these skills with friends and family who are supporting you in your, you know, on your journey to establishing a great personal training business, such that when you get in front of your customers or prospective customers, you're able to do this with a high degree of confidence and a high degree of self-belief. But rapport creates trust. Who can tell me honestly that they have bought something of consequence from someone that they didn't trust? Has anyone ever done that?
Yes, I have.
You bought from something from someone you didn't trust? Tell us about that.
Sometimes you get roped into it. I know we had it was a real estate opportunity that was clearly very dodgy, and I was in a room with people who were basically making us sign up, and we were virtually forced to sign it, and it cost us $2,000 to get out of it, and right. The whole thing was a big dodgy real estate deal.
Right, okay.
So that's the short version, but yes, I have. Yeah.
Okay. So that's possibly the power of the peer pressure in a room and all that sort of, Karen, and that's an unusual set of circumstances, but you're not the first person who's been in that situation, I'm sure. But as a general rule, we won't buy from people that we don't trust. And you know, if you haven't established trust with your prospective client, they almost certainly are not going to buy from you. And establishing great rapport, creating a friend, and we're not talking about a deep friend. You know, we're creating a friend at a superficial level, but the rapport allows you to create that friend, which creates the base level of trust, which allows you to move to the next stage of the sales process, which is to uncover their pain so you can truly find the right solution for them. Okay. And a quote from Dale Carnegie, another great author that you should take advantage of, is you can make more friends in 2 months by becoming interested in other people than you can in 2 years trying to get other people interested in you. And that's a great tip. You know, if you become more interested in other people and becoming a great communicator, then you'll end up with more clients than you know what to do with. And you'll be able to grow your business successfully as a result. Okay. Tip number four. We're not going to go too much into this because, you know, this is the four W's and the H, five W's and the H questions in this particular case. You know, you have to become great at these. Again, you have to use these as the tools to truly uncover the person's pain. You have to think of your clients like an onion. You know, it's not good enough to peel off one layer. You're the best part of an onion. Is two or three layers below that crispy, you know, surface that falls off when you have an onion in your hand. You have to be able to peel those layers away, and it's not until you peel those layers away that you truly find the best part of the onion, or alternatively in this case the true pain, that allows you then to not only confirm that you actually care about the client, confirm that their trust in you is founded, that the rapport that you've built has allowed you to achieve that, but now to find the solution and to show them that you can take them from where they are, which is a painful position, and truly deal with their underlying pain and take them to a place of pleasure, to build the bridge that needs to be built for them to walk over or run over or bike over, whatever the case may be. And that's all about, you know, becoming a great listener. It's all about asking the right questions. It's all about the stuff we talk about in the program, which is, you know, two eyes, two ears, one mouth. So you look, so body language, you look for those sorts of things, and you listen twice as much as you talk. Whereas most salespeople talk three times as much as they listen. But this is where tip number four is about using the process to get the outcomes that you seek. Learning to peel back the layers. You know, ultimately your goal should be to almost make the client cry. To make the client, you know, you should be able to, and I say that with a little bit of tongue in cheek, if you have a client, female client, more likely than a male client, but not necessarily, crying about the pain that they feel, you really know you've got to the meaty part of the onion, or you know that their facial, you know, their face, their neck's getting red, their face is getting red, they're sweating, they're uncomfortable, not uncomfortable in a bad, in a way that they're uncomfortable with you, but just uncomfortable that, you know, that their pain is being exposed. You know then, you know, that they trust you, that you've asked the questions and that you've peeled the layers back sufficiently, and now you have to rescue them. Now you've reached a point where you've earned the right to show them the solution and how you're going to take them from where they are to where they want to be. Okay. And again, you shouldn't be doing this, practicing this on your clients. You should be practicing this and all the other ways that you can practice it, such that, you know, when you are doing it with your prospective clients, that you're working towards being not just consciously competent, but working towards being unconsciously competent. Okay. Any questions about that?
No.
Cool. Okay. Tip number five. This is about managing the relationship and building evangelists. You know, at the end of the day, once you've got a client, you can't take them for granted. You've got to manage the relationship. And if you do that, you know, you will turn them into evangelists, and then you know, they'll sing your praises. They will be the catalyst for referring people to you or bringing people to you and growing your business, and you'll be starting the same process all over again. You know, interestingly, the better we get at sales, the better we get at creating that rapport, the better we get at uncovering the pain, providing the solution and asking for the money, the less marketing we have to do, the less money we have to actually invest in all of the different forms of marketing, and the less time we have to invest in all of those different forms of marketing, because it's those clients that we've taken on that journey that do it for us. But, you know, that requires active customer relationship in all of different ways, and I'm not going to go into that too much because that's a whole different topic. But building rapport and maintaining trust is not a one-off thing that happens when you establish that client relationship. You know, that's an ongoing thing. You know, maintaining trust, increasing rapport, creating layer upon layer upon layer, deepening the relationship, broadening the relationship, that's what creates clients for life. You know, that's what creates, you know, true evangelists who help your business grow and make your business grow. So, you know, just because you've got them on board and you're helping them each week, don't take advantage of them. Deepen the relationship, broaden the relationship, and as I say, you'll have a client for life and a great source of future business. Reciprocity, for the sake of a better word. So that's tip number five. Okay, some bonus tips. Great quote from Michael Jordan. Nothing of value comes without being earned. That's why great leaders are those who lead by example first. You can't demand respect because of a title or a position and expect people to follow. That might work for a little while, but in the long run, people respond to what they see. So tip number, what's that about? What's that bonus tip about, do you think? What's the underlying thing that I'm trying to get across there? Anybody want to have a guess? No?
Hi, Savvy.
Hi. Whoops.
Can I'll have a go.
It's about
practicing, isn't it? The great leaders would have to get it right by example. They'd have to practice and practice and practice.
Yeah, you have to
You can't fake one.
Yeah, you have to, this is more about being the example. You have to, you have to be a living, breathing example of what you preach. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be, a Miss Olympia or a Mr. Olympia or a world record holder and this or a world record holder and that, but you have to live and breathe what you preach. It's not acceptable to be an unhealthy, unfit, overweight personal trainer, negative, etc. All of those sorts of things. You have to be an example of the things that your clients may aspire to be like, and sadly that's not always the case in our profession, if you establish rapport with someone, they'll trust you, but that trust can easily be compromised if you don't walk the talk yourself. Trust is difficult to establish and easily broken. And so we have to lead by example and live by example, on an ongoing basis. And so that our clients, while they may not aspire to be specifically like us, we inspire them to be the best that they can be and to achieve what it is that they seek to achieve, because they see in us the same sort of, positive attributes and positivity and outlook towards being healthy, fit, strong for life. Okay, so that's just a bonus tip. You have to look after yourself just as much as you have to look after your customers. Okay, and the second one, which is actually, a Michael Jordanism as well. Don't practice until you get it right. Practice until you can't get it wrong. And it was interesting doing a workshop in Christchurch in the weekend how difficult it was for people to role play. And I understand that because, we're a little bit outside our comfort zone. But I did ask the question, I said, guys, if you don't practice the stuff in a role play situation, when are you going to practice it? And it begs the obvious question that the practice is being undertaken on prospective clients. Well, with all due respect, I don't think that's acceptable from a professionalism point of view. But equally, what do you expect the outcomes to be? The outcomes will be that you will have far less success than you deserve, far less success than you should. And it'll take you a lot longer to get to where it is you want to get to. If you're practicing how to create rapport with a prospect, if you're practicing on how then to, uncover their pain and provide the solution, ask for the money on a prospect, then you're going to burn a lot of prospects before you get good at it. Michael Jordan didn't get good at shooting 20-foot, 30-foot jump shots scoring 50,000 points or however many points he scored in the NBA by doing it in a game. He did it by to practice the hours and hours and hours and hours that he put in the gym on his own or in the gym with his team. And so I put it to you that you know, the practice that you have to put in to do all of the things that we've talked about tonight have to come when you're standing in front of your mirror, when you're role-playing with yourself, when you're role-playing with other people. Now, I did a role-play on Saturday just to illustrate how silly it is, where I sat in a chair and I played both parts. So I role-played with myself. So when I was the client, I was facing one direction, and so I would play the role of the client, then I'd flip my chair around the other direction, and now I'm the trainer, and I role-played with myself. Now, at the end of the day, you have to do that sort of stuff in order to get good. So don't practice until you get it right. Practice until you can't get it wrong. But firstly, you've got to actually practice. Now, if I ask the question of those of you that are actually doing it or about to do it, when was the last time you did a role play? What would the answer be? Abdul, just put you on the spot.
The last Max workshop?
The last Max workshop, which was?
Yeah. Oh, I mean the previous one, sorry. Not the last one, previous one.
Previous one, yep.
Which is about food?
Yep. Okay, so quite a while ago. Yep. Anyone else? Marcin, when was the last time you did a role play?
I don't think I ever did.
Right. Okay.
So when I think about it, I remember Roy saying, "Don't role play, real play." So what I'm trying to do every time when I go to fucking save or whatever, I just struck a conversation with the clerk.
That's role play.
And I'm trying to go.
Yeah.
As the role play.
That's okay. Role play. Yeah. I mean, because it's. I mean, you're role playing, but they're not specific. You're practicing your communication skills. That's great, yeah, and that's role-playing. And if that leads then to a discussion about someone showing an interest as a prospect, that's great.
Because then I do it every day.
You do it every day, okay. Such that when you get in front of someone, it will be far more natural. When you actually get in front of someone who is someone who has rung you or someone who's taking advantage of a complimentary session or whatever the case may be, then you're going to be in a position to be able to create the rapport that's going to allow you to take it to the next stage. Okay.
So, yeah, but now I'm thinking, like, sometimes it's very hard to build rapport. And I'm thinking, like, okay, so if you're saying that without building rapport, this is going to be very hard for sale.
Yep.
But I have few clients that it took me literally 3 sessions to build the actual proper rapport.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because,
maybe that's what I think.
Yeah, your level of what you are setting or the bar that you're setting for what you regard as rapport is quite high. Now,
okay,
they wouldn't have, presumably they're paying you by that session.
Yes.
Yeah. It's highly unlikely that they would have let you uncover their pain and then bought from you if they didn't trust you. So you had.
They feel like I knew it, but they actually, okay.
Yeah, you may feel that you don't know them well enough. You might feel that you need to know them better. That's okay. But you must have established it's highly likely, because most people don't buy from people they don't trust. You must have established a sufficiently strong level of rapport and trust for them to expose their pain for you, and ultimately for you when you ask the sale for them to say yes and pass over their money. Otherwise, they wouldn't be training with you. Okay, so I think it may be that you're placing an ongoing demand on yourself to increase or improve that level of rapport. That's great.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's great. That needs to keep happening. It's an ongoing process, but I think you're doing it, but you may just have set the bar for yourself a bit higher, so that's okay. But I think I get the gist that not everyone role plays enough. And what I'm encouraging everyone to do is you know, it's the process, and we haven't talked about the sales process tonight and what you ask and how you ask it and when you ask, and all that. It's a whole different session and covered, you know, and we spend days on that, but it's a process. But your ability to follow the system or to follow the process and to do it, to go from unconscious incompetence to conscious competence to conscious to unconscious competence is about practice. It doesn't happen overnight. And I encourage you to practice with yourself and practice with people that it doesn't actually matter with. And when I'm saying that it doesn't matter, practice with people that you're not trying to sell to, practice with people who are just helping you to practice, such that when you get in front of a prospect, you really can make that connection and you really can make a sale, and you can turn them into a client and ultimately into an evangelist that helps you to grow a successful business. Okay, so that's just the bonus tips. And finally, I'm going to play this clip, and hopefully everyone can hear it, and if not, I might just get you to write this down now before I start it. It's just a YouTube clip, and after the .com on YouTube, when you go onto if you put the URL into your browser, you put a /, and then you type, put the rest of this in, which is everyone can see it, but I'll read it out. Watch /V equals 1 R U J v 6 n Q, K. If everyone writes that bit down, you just add that bit to the URL. It's worth watching. It's only about 5 minutes, 6 minutes long. It's a Anthony Robbins clip. So I'll try and play it now, and hopefully everyone will be able to hear it through my speakers on my laptop.
Steve's a dear friend of mine, and when he was building the Wynn, I'll never forget, he was at my home in Sun Valley. I'd just gotten to meet him. It was New Year's, and everybody else was standing watching the fireworks, and I was sitting at a table.
Can everybody hear that?
Yes, we can.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, I was basically doing a brain melt, sucking out of his brain everything I possibly could. How do you think about this? What do you do? How do you market? And here's what I learned from Steve. People don't buy products. They buy feelings. People don't buy products, they buy states. People don't buy products, they buy identities. And he and I went back and forth for about 2.5 or 3 hours and became lifelong friends the last decade and a half. And what I learned from him is, how many of you know the 6 human needs? Let me see your hands. Raise your hand if you know the 6 human needs. So real quick, for those who've never heard it before, what's the first need that all human beings have? It's not a goal, it's not a desire, it's a need. What is it? Quick. Certainty. Everyone has a need for certainty that they can avoid pain, or ideally they can have some pleasure. But that's a survival instinct. If you have total certainty all the time, you will feel completely what? Bored. So what's the second human need? Quick. Uncertainty, which another word for uncertainty is variety. The need for surprise. Who here loves surprises? Say I. Boldness, you like the surprises you want, right? Surprises you don't want, you call problems. But you need them too to be alive, and business provides plenty of variety, right? What's the third human need? The need to feel significant. Significant is the third human need, to feel significant, unique, special, important, significant. Who has the need to feel significant? Who? Who? Everybody. What if people say, I don't want to feel significant? That's how they get significance, by saying, I don't need significance. I'm more unique than you. You have the significance. I don't. Some people get significance by buying a $500,000 or $1 million car. Some people get significance by saying, I don't spend any money. I don't need a nice car. I'm so special, I don't need a nice car. It's called a reverse ego symbol. Same need, they just go about it a different way. But if you're totally significant and unique and special, that feels good, but then you feel alone, because the fourth human need is need for connection and love. Who needs connection and love? Everybody. And by the way, those first needs everybody gets. Certainty, uncertainty, a variety, significance. Even if you have to make up stories about yourself, you'll find a way to feel significant, right? And a feeling of connection, if not love. The final two needs are the needs of the spirit. You must grow is number five. You grow or you. If a business is not growing, what is it doing? That's a fact. There's no such thing as a stable business. You're growing or you're dying. There's no plateau that you can stay at and stick around. And lastly, number six, you got to grow. And with what you grow, you have to contribute, because everything in the universe is either growing or dying. Everything in the universe is contributing, or it's eliminated by evolution, if nothing else. We're made for that. Having said that, when I was with Steve that night, I explained these six needs. As I'm explaining them, he grabs me physically by the shoulder. He goes, that one, that one. And I just said significance. He goes, that's where I've made all of my money in my entire life. He said, people will pay disproportionately to feel significant than for any other need. He said, people will spend more money. People want love, but they think they'll get love if they're significant, or at least they'll get laid if they're significant. He said, so I've built the most expensive hotels in the world, and I charge more than anybody else, and even with Las Vegas.
Okay. So, sorry, is everybody still there?
Yes, we are.
Wrong one. Okay. So I stopped that partway through because everyone's hopefully got the clip, so therefore you can, hang on, what word on there? You can watch the rest of that later. But interestingly, you know, what was a key part of the first fundamental human need? Uncertainty was all about moving from pain to pleasure. But the six fundamental human needs, which we deal with in the program, go to the core of, you know, not only attracting but selling to the clients and creating you know, and building those long-term relationships. So, so hopefully you take the time to watch the rest of the clip, and there's lots of other ones on there that are Anthony Robbins, which are well worth watching. So just recapping again, just really, really quickly, you know, understand the pleasure principle, but understand it not just at a superficial level, dig down. Learn to walk in your client's shoes, or try and, you know, gain a really deep understanding of what it might be like to walk in their shoes and to experience the pain that they feel. Become great at building rapport, not just good at building rapport. And if you do, then the rest of the process will just fall into place easily for you. You know, be a great, great at peeling back the layers of the onion. You know, don't just peel back one layer or two layers. Really get to that really juicy, tasty bit, because that's, you know, that when you get there, you know, that you've created an amazing start, or the start of an amazing relationship. Now you've just got to show them the solution, show them how you're going to take them from where they are to where they want to be. Don't take the relationship for granted. You know, build on it, you know, which is clearly what you were doing, Marcin, or trying to do, and then they'll be shouting into the loud hailer for you and helping your business to grow. Lead by example, be a walking, breathing example of what you do, and practice. You know, practice until you don't get it wrong, rather than until you get it right. Okay. Any questions before we sign off on that, or any comments anyone like to make?
No, it was awesome. It was awesome to remind myself about six human needs.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a really important one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cool. All righty. Okay. Well, thanks for that, everybody. I know, Abdul, we're due to catch up again on our last email. But, you know, if anyone wants to have a one-on-one chat about any challenges they've got, then you know where to find me. Otherwise,
I would like to, Savvy. I'm just going to type you an email now. I would like to have one-on-one with you.
Okay, cool. Awesome. All right. And, yeah, and Deb or Lisa or Rose, we're probably due to have another catch up as well following our last one. But yeah, add this to the box of tricks that you've got to your toolbox. But you know, tools are only as good as the person that takes them out and uses them. So hopefully that helps everyone. Have a great night, and we'll look forward to chatting to you all again soon.
Was awesome. Thanks, Evie.
Okay. Have a great night, everyone.
Thank you.
Okay. Radio. See you guys.